Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When I finished performing mystic... This is Lord Shiva speaking to his wife, Bhavani. When I finished performing mystic yoga for 1,000 years, you asked me upon whom I was meditating. Now here is that supreme person to whom time has no entrance and who the Vedas cannot understand. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Eternal time enters anywhere and everywhere, but it cannot enter the kingdom of God, nor can the Vedas understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an indication of the Lord's being omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. Text 45. Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, the person who bore the great mountain on his back for the churning of the ocean of milk is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Shangadamba. I have now described to you his prowess." Text 46. The endeavor of one who constantly hears or describes this narration of the churning of the ocean of milk will never be fruitless. Indeed, the chanting of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only means to annihilate all sufferings in this material world. Text 47. Assuming the form of a young woman and thus bewildering the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributed to his devotees, the demigods, the nectar produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always fulfills the desires of his devotees, I offer my respectful obeisances. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The instruction of this narration concerning the churning of the milk ocean is clearly manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is equal to everyone, because of natural affection, he favors his devotees, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, 29th verse. Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stiya navriya. Yeva janti tumam bhaktya mayi teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service to me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. This partiality of the Supreme Personality of God, it is natural. A person cares for his children, not because of partiality, but in a reciprocation of love. The children depend on the father's affection, and the father affectionately maintains the children. Similarly, because devotees do not know anything but the lotus feet of the Lord is always prepared to give protection to his devotees and fulfill their desires. He therefore says, Komteya pradijanihi na me bhaktya pranamshati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O mangala timarandasa. This verse, Prabhupada's explaining the purport, how Krishna is equal to everyone except the devotees. He's especially inclined and favorable to the devotees. And Prabhupada quotes the leading verse from a section of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna starts off in chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge. Krishna is explaining how he doesn't favor anyone. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. I'm samaham. I am equal to all living entities. And then after that, for the next five verses, Krishna explains how he's not equal to everyone. How he favors the devotees. There's about five verses there that some acharyas, they group together in a category saying Krishna favors his devotees. So you have this verse, Samaham sarvabhuteshu. Then the next verse is Apichet sudaracharo vajitenam ananyabhak sarayeva chamantavya Samyak Vyavasito Hisa. Where Krishna says, even if the devotee, so this is how much he favors him. First he says in this verse that Prabhupada quotes in the purport, I'm equal to everyone, but I'm especially inclined towards my devotees. And Prabhupada says this is natural, because Krishna is the father of everyone. And as we see in our world, fathers and people, individuals, they reciprocate with one another on the basis of reciprocation. As you love me, I love you. As you do unto me, I do unto you. This is natural. Natural means it's a quality of nature. It's a quality of the soul. It's a quality of God. To reciprocate in kind according to the love offered by the devotee. That's why Krishna says, Yayatamam Rupadyante. He says, if you want, as you surrender unto me, I surrender to you. As you love me, I love you. If you want to love me in an impersonal way, I will reciprocate with you in an impersonal way. If you want to love me in a very personal, tender, intimate way, then I will love you in the same. So this is the nature of God. So that's why we see the nature here. A man has 5 sons. Prabhupada explains this analogy, which he refers to here in the purport. He has 5 sons, and 4 of them are very independent. They're very self-reliant, very intelligent. They're not very much dependent on father. They're doing everything themselves. But one son, he's very much dependent. He's always approaching the father in a humble mood. Oh, father, may I help you? May I serve you? Please guide me. Please instruct me. What should I do now? What should I do then? So in this way, he becomes very dependent on the father. So his humble approach, where he's very much intimately approaching his father, feeling dependence on his father, it elicits a very personal response. It draws the affection from the father. This principle of drawing down affection is known as sneha. Sneha means a downward flow of affection. Just as the water seeks its own level, water flows down from the mountain and it goes to the ocean, from high to low. So affection flows like that. Affection flows to the most receptive person, most receptive vessel. So in a family you have one son, then one daughter, then one son, and then one daughter. So now, the first child, so much sneha, affection. But then a new child comes. So then the sneha goes to the young baby. Then after 3 or 4, the fifth child, although you have 4 other children, he gets all the affection. He receives all the sneha. Because affection will go down to the most dependent one. Because the youngest, smallest, most innocent and weakest one, the most inexperienced one, will naturally draw the sneha, the love of the father. So Krishna's the same way. That's why there's 6 symptoms of surrender in devotional service. And these practices of surrender are simply means to attract the attention and mercy of the Lord. The more surrendered you are, the more you're under the shelter of Krishna. The more dependent you are, the more Krishna takes notice of you, and the more Krishna protects you. So the nature of the non-devotee, or the materialistic person, he always wants to declare independence from God. Remember, we used to distribute a magazine in 1976, declaring our dependence on God. Because it was the 200th anniversary of independence of America from British imperialism. So they were very happy, oh, we're independent. Women's independence, men's independence, all kinds of liberation, independence movements. But actually, so those people have their independence and they're separated from God, and he doesn't care for them or pay any attention to them. He just fulfills their desires according to their material ambitions and karmas. But the devotee is something special. That Krishna naturally, as we see the nature, we have that nature, father and mother have the nature to take more care and show more love and more interest in a dependent child. So a soul who becomes dependent on the Lord, naturally he gets his attention. So for 5 verses in a row, Krishna explains one after the other of different categories of people that become dependent on me because of having fallen down into sin, they turn to him, or because they're not intelligent or lowborn or whatever. And then he finally says, anyone who just thinks of me, manmanabhavamadbhakto. This is how he ends this discussion from 9:29 in Bhagavad Gita, verse 9, chapter 9, verse 29 to verse 34. 34 says, manmanabhavamadbhakto magyaji mandamaskru. Always think of me, become my devotee. It's very easy. Just offer obeisances. Just think of me. And you become matprayana. You become very dear to me. And repeats the same conception later on, where he says, you become my priya. You become my beloved just by thinking of me. Just by thinking of Krishna, you become beloved of God. Just by offering obeisances or worshipping him. So this is a very nice reinforcement. Although Krishna declares impartiality in verse 29, samaham sarvabhuteshu, then he goes on to kind of define that impartiality. Yes, I'm impartial. But if you're partial to me, I'm partial to you. So now if you look at these verses in Bhagavad Gita where it's talking about Krishna's partiality, it appears that there's some contradiction. And there's a nice description in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, where he explains once he was flying in the sky, as great yogis often do. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, I had a dream. I was flying in the sky. While I was flying, I met Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And they asked me, oh, Vaishnava Thakur, you are very learned in the Shastras. Can you explain something about Bhagavad Gita to us? We have some confusion about the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe you can sort it out for us. So the Adikavi, right, the Adikavi, the original intelligent person of the universe, the Lord Brahma, yet Adikaviye, who received direct knowledge from Chaitya Guru, he was bewildered about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So just understand how much depth there is to Bhagavad Gita. If Lord Brahma has difficulty, and Lord Shiva, who just spoke all these verses, if he has difficulty understanding the Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of us? Therefore, tadvahi pranipatena, parivrashnena sevya. You must find guru, teacher, some guru. So we have our classes here. Brajbihari is teaching Bhagavad Gita, and there's books written by our godbrothers, Purijan. So many teachers are there trying to help us understand, commentators like Vishwanath and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So what is the contradiction that the demigods were asking? They said, well, Thakur, in verse number 30, 9th chapter Gita, verse 30, Krishna says, api chet sudara acharo vajate mam ananyava sarva chamantavya samya vyavasitovisa. He says, and Krishna says in this verse, that someone may be sudar acharo. They may sin, very bad behavior, sudar achar. They may commit very abominable activities. But if they give that up and they turn to Krishna with ananya bhakti, they become great sadhus. Ananya bhakt, sadhu eva chamantavya. Krishna says, you may fall down into sin, you may have a fall down, but if you surrender to me unequivocally, because ananya bhakt, the term ananya bhakt, which is used there, means ananya bhakti. Ananya bhakti means devotion without deviation, devotion without mixture. Practically it means sarva dharman pritya. In other words, you become a completely surrendered soul to Krishna, then you become a great sadhu in the eyes of Krishna. Even though the day before you fell down, or the week before you had so much difficulty, but now you become completely dedicated to Krishna. Ananya bhakti means anya vilashita sunyam yanakarma nirambritam anukulena krishnanam shivanam bhaktuttamam. That is ananya bhakti. That bhakti that has no karma, no jnana, nothing mixed in. Just pure bhakti. Practically, Krishna is saying, you may fall down into sinful activities, but if you dedicate yourself fully to me, you become a great sadhu. That's verse 30. Now verse 31, there seems to be a contradiction. This is what Brahma and Shiva asked Bhaktivinoda. Because in 31, Krishna says, what's he say? Shipram bhavati dharmatma. Right? Shipram bhavati dharmatma. Was that the start? Shipram bhavati dharmatma. Shantim, he says, Shachvat shantim nigachati. Then Prabhupada quoted this line, Konteya pradijanahi name bhakti pradashati. This is quoted here in today's purport. That's why we're discussing. Konteya pradijani name bhakti pranashati. So this is verse 31, 9th chapter of Gita, verse 31. So Krishna is saying, Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nigachati. So Krishna, first he says in verse 30, someone commits abominable activities, commits sins, but if he becomes my ananya bhakt, just renders undeviating service to me, and surrenders fully, sarvadharman pritvija, mamekam sharanam braja, I take away all his sins, and he becomes a great sadhu. Now in this verse, Krishna is saying, Arjuna, O Kunti, Kunteya, declare it boldly, that my devotee, that such a devotee, very soon becomes righteous and very dutiful. He becomes a dharmatma. So Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva are saying, what? But wait a minute. First he says in verse 30 that a sinful person who dedicates himself to Krishna with ananya bhakti, he becomes a sadhu. A great sadhu. Now in the next verse he's saying he just becomes dutiful. Such a person who practices ananya bhakti, he becomes dutiful and righteous in the future. He becomes a dharmatma. A dharmatma just means someone who follows dharma and he's a good person. There's a big difference between a dharmatma and a sadhu. Sadhu is something very special. See, that's what Krishna says. He's ananya bhakti sadhu. Ananya bhakti sadhu. And then he says, declare it boldly, he becomes righteous. He becomes dutiful, pious, he performs his pati dharma, kula dharma, all these dharmas. So they were bewildered. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, no problem. I'll explain to you. So he said, what Krishna's explaining here in verse 30 about the devotee who falls down, but he renders ananya bhakti, this is a fact. He becomes a great sadhu, way beyond a dharmatma or a dharmavadi or dharmadwaji. Sometimes you say dharmadwaji. Dwaja means flag, and dharma means religion, piety, purity. He's a dharmadwaji. He's flying the flag of religious principles. He's a good, pious Hindu, Christian, whatever. So then, in the next verse, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, what Krishna's responding to in the next verse, he's saying that that person, that second person who observes his god brother or god sister, some devotee, he observes, this person fell down, they committed abominable activities, but because they surrendered to Krishna, sarvadharman pritvija, and they became purified by the mercy of Krishna, they became ananya bhaktas. They became undeviating devotees with no mix of karma or jnana, and they became great sadhus. So that second person who glorified, look at Krishna Das. Or I'm just saying, proverbial Krishna Das. Or Chaitanya Das or whoever. Look, he fell down, but he's now totally dedicated to Krishna. He's become a great sadhu. So a person who glorifies him, that person will very soon become very dutiful himself. He'll become very righteous and become very pious. He will become a dharmatma, even if he's a duratma. You may be a duratma. Duratma means a bad guy. Bad guy. Bad guy means duratma. Atma means person, soul, body, mind. So dura means bad. So the duratma becomes a dharmatma by glorifying a devotee. So this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained. This is what Krishna is saying in verse 31. Otherwise, it's kind of contradictory. One verse he's saying, you fall down, you become ananya bhakta, you're a great sadhu. Then the next verse he says, in the future, you will become In the future, you'll become dutiful and you'll become a pious person. So there's a contradiction there. So this is how it's explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentaries. So there we see how Krishna himself, he is glorifying a principle. The principle that he's mentioning in verse 31, how important it is to appreciate the devotees. Whether if they fall down, be careful, because they may pick themselves up. And so you curse them and step on them and condemn them and blaspheme them and find fault with them when they're down. But then they come up again. And just like if someone is going to a very, very high mountain peak, climbing through the Himalayas, anyone who's gone through mountains, Pyrenees or Swiss Alps or whatever, when you want to go to the highest mountain, you have to go up and down many mountain ranges, the lower mountains. So you go up, 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 and then because you're approaching that taller mountain, so you're rising and rising up. You go up these roads like this, and then you go down. So sometimes a person's on his way to that high, high destiny, Param Gatim, Vaikuntha Padam, that topmost destiny of the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. So he's going to this topmost destiny, the peak of the mountain, the highest point of spiritual realization. So you see him, he's climbing up. Oh, look, he's making nice progress. Because he's going up the mountain. Oh, look, he's very high. He's up there. Then the next minute, oh, I don't see him. He fell down. Ah, he's finished. He maybe fell from your view. You cannot see him. But he's on the other side of the mountain. He's gone down the back side of the mountain only to come up even higher on the next mountain. Because you have to go up one mountain and then down. And then up again a higher mountain and then down and finally. So this is the analogy that's given. We have to be very careful. Oh look, he's down. See, I don't see him anymore. He's not progressing. He's not going upward. He's in the valley. He's finished. Because you don't see him. He's in the valley. He's finished. Because you don't see him. But Krishna sees him. And Krishna's protecting him. So when that person turns unequivocally and undeviatingly to Krishna, then the next time you see, hey, wait a minute. Look, he's way up there again. He's on even a higher peak and a higher elevation than he was a year ago. So this is how we have to be careful. So Krishna himself says, that person who glorifies other devotees, even if they fall down and they pick themselves up, if he glorifies them, he becomes purified. He becomes a dharmatma. He becomes dutiful and pious and pure. So Krishna, as we mentioned, he's reminding us how important it is to appreciate devotees and to glorify and find the good qualities in them. Because what happens is, when we find the good qualities in others, those good qualities find a home in our heart. When we try to find the good qualities in others, that good quality is attracted to us. And so, oh, you have such a mentality, you have such a nice heart, that you're looking for the good qualities in others. Well, I want to come and reside in your heart. So the good qualities will come into your heart and live there. And they will make your heart the abode of good qualities. But the converse is also true. That if you see devotees or God's sisters and brothers, etc., you say, oh, this fault, this is wrong, that's wrong, then those things come into your heart, those bad qualities, those evil tendencies, those bad things. So we can take some instruction here, how Krishna's impartial. He's impartial, but he's favorable to devotees. So being Krishna's part and parcel, we should also be impartial, equal to everyone. Right? Vidyavanaya sampani, brahmani gavi hashchani, shuni chaiva sapakecha, pandita samadarshana. Samadarshana. We look equally upon everyone, but we're especially benevolent. We're especially kind to the devotees. Because Prabhupada explained, there's no question of attaining love for Krishna unless you can appreciate the devotees. Appreciating devotees means to understand that there's different categories of devotees. Not that, oh, I appreciate the Mahabhagavats, I appreciate the liberated souls, but I don't appreciate the Bowery bum who brings a roll of toilet paper to the Second Avenue Temple. I don't appreciate that. No, you have to appreciate devotion wherever it appears. That was Prabhupada's unique broad-minded quality as a perfect Vaishnava Brahman and pure devotee. That he saw, if he saw one spark of devotion burning in the dry leaves of any heart, one spark of devotion burning in the dried leaves of any heart, Prabhupada would come by and he would fan that spark. And that spark would become a small flame. And that flame will become a small fire. And that fire will become a bonfire. Karmani nirdhati kintu jabati bhajam. So that bonfire of devotion would be ignited in the heart of the devotee by Srila Prabhupada, and that bonfire would grow up. That fire would grow up and burn up all the seeds of karma. This is the great vision and kindness of Prabhupada. So, Krishna's impartial, but he's partial to devotees. So how much extra feelings we should feel for devotees? They surrender to Krishna. They're trying to surrender fully. Everyone's trying to become Ananya Bhakta. So on different levels, Kanishka, Madhya, Mutam, they're all there. That's, levels are there for selectivity. But in terms of partiality, we are very favorable towards devotees. We see someone, oh, devotee. If you want to have that experience of how much you appreciate all kinds of devotees, just go somewhere away from devotees. Go to your mother's house, I never did, but go to your father's house or go somewhere and stay a month with, not exactly, you know, let's say a month with covered devotees. Everyone's a devotee. So you stay a month with your relatives or parents, or maybe you're stranded somewhere in some country for 2 weeks and where there's no temple and you're living in some apartment in some hellish city where everybody eats cockroaches and ants for lunch. And then you finally, after that hellish separation from devotees, some devotee comes to that place. You don't care. You just somehow you see some neck beads around his neck. Hey, Hare Krishna. Hey, Hare Bol. Hey, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Hawaii. I'm just running around here and there. So then you come on in. Come to my flat. Come to my apartment. You'll be so happy. Because we had one friend. He was in a foreign country for several years. A devotee, God brother, he was for several years collecting money for different ideas and whatnot, seva. So then finally he came back and he was practically like kissing the feet of every devotee. You know, Bhakta Joe and, you know, His Holiness and His Divine Grace and everyone and every, because he's had so much appreciation. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So now we live with all these, he's a nobody. Just like cutting all the time. Cut the sannyasis, cut the gurus, cut the god brothers, cut everybody. Cut Prabhupada, cut other acharyas. And then what happens? We cut off our bhakti lata at the base, at the very foundation. We just cut it. So we must develop the eyes of appreciation. There's a famous phrase they have. They say that, no, I believe that. Every sinner has a future, and every saint had a past. So we look around, okay, there's so many saintly persons. But were you always a saintly person? Were you always pure and God-fearing and following the laws of God all the time, your whole life? Well, actually, the thing is, I'd like to forget about that. Anyway, so that will keep us humble to remember what we were yesterday, 1 hour ago, 1 week ago. Oh, 20 years ago. Wow. You're an old devotee. 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. You're old nothing. Your mind has become a little stale because you've lost the ability to discriminate. Because if you think 25 years is old, it means you're dumb, you're stupid, you're foolish. 25 years is like one tiny pinprick of a second. You haven't even started to chant Hare Krishna. Never chanted 11 rounds in your life. You're 30 years in the movement, you never chanted 64 rounds. It's impossible. It's like the Marquis of Zetland asking to become a Brahmin. Can I become a Brahmin? Yes, if you follow these four regulative principles. But then the Marquis of Zetland, he told Bhaktisiddhanta, impossible. Like we say, we ask someone, you can chant 64 rounds? Impossible. So how much taste we have, how much attraction we have. So we must become humble. So every saint had a past. So we consider ourselves saintly, but we had a past. And remember the past. And then we look around and say, oh, he's a sinner, he's fallen, he's not advanced. So we're looking at so many sinners in devotional garb. But all those sinners also have futures. They have a future, they have a tomorrow. And they may get that mercy of Krishna, they may become that Ananya Bhakt. And then where are you? You're just left with all their faults. They deposit all their faults with you. They dump off all their faults and all their bad qualities with you because you want those things. You want to talk about those things. You want to harbor those things. You want to hold on to those things. So Krishna says, okay, you want all these faults and all these bad qualities in my devotees? Here, take them. I'll take them off to my devotee and I'll give them to you. You can keep them in storage. You can store them in your mind and heart. You can become the purveyor and the go-down in charge of Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsarya. So these, we don't want to be in charge of these, this go-down. Cheto Dharmana Marjanam, Bhava Mahadavaya Nirvahatanam. We want to purify the heart. So let us be impartial to everyone, but really genuinely appreciate the devotees, honor the devotees, respect the devotees. As they say in English, it's a great phrase. There's two phrases I really like. We used to get drummed into our heads in America. If you can't say something good about someone, then... If you can't say something good about a devotee or anyone, then don't say anything at all. Mon Vrata. That's one great shloka from the material world. Another shloka is, mind your own business, Baba. What's your business? Is your business my business? No. I'm selling my cloth. If you're worried about my sales, my profits, you know, you won't be able to sell your groceries. What's your business? Bhakti, pure bhakti. Are you pure? Have you reached a success in your business? Have you turned over 100% profit this year? Have you made 100 times? Have you made double the advancement from last year? This is a good businessman. Oh, last year 1 crore rupee. This year 2 crores. We doubled our profit. Okay, so you're in devotion for 2 years. Are you twice as much advanced or two times more advanced than you were 2 years ago? Well, actually, you know, when I first joined, I was really enthusiastic. I was really humble. I was really sincere. I really appreciate all the devotees, but that was a long time ago. Now I'm in a little different mood. I'm cynical. I don't trust anybody. I have practically no faith. Respect, I never heard of it. Appreciation, what is it? Love for devotees, love for guru? Are you crazy? There ain't no love in this world. This is the advanced devotee, so-called advanced, who's been around for a few years. He knows the ropes. Hey, look, I know what's going on. So this person, his business is completely bankrupt. He has no profit to show, only losses. He's losing every day, and pretty soon he'll lose everything. Vinashati, it will be destroyed. His bhakti. So let us take a nice lesson from Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita and this verse. Kaunteya Pratijani Nami Bhakti Pranashati. Krishna says, what's your business? Is your business my business? No. But if you insult him and offend him and condemn him and don't appreciate him, then surely you will perish. Perish means be blown away, gone. Disappear into oblivion. So, are there any questions or comments? The question is, a devotee is criticizing another devotee. How does that criticism affect the other devotee? Is that what your question is? Like drops of water on the back of a duck. When it rains, there's a duck, a bird, and he has oily feathers. There's an oily, waxy covering on his feathers. So he has a waterproof jacket. His body is made that way. So he sits there in the rain, and the rain just runs off his back like a drop of Jivana Talamala. How's it go? Jivana Talamala? That song, Bhajaburi. Jivana Talamala? Anyway. Kamala Jala Jala. Kamala Jala Jala Jivana Talamala. There's this song by Govindadas Kaviraj where he says that life itself is like a drop of water, as Prabhupada said, tiltering. A drop of water tiltering on a lotus leaf. A lotus leaf has a waxy covering, so when water is there, you go like that, and a drop of water, it beads up and runs off. So the when one's criticizing another devotee, it doesn't affect him. He's not affected, because he's insulated and protected by Krishna. However, it doesn't affect him as long as he's beyond criticism. But if he's actually culpable or blamable, and someone is not so much criticizing, but pointing out, maybe even with the proper motivation, it depends on the motivation, he's pointing out some discrepancy or something to improve that devotee, then the devotee should take heed. Because even a devotee of the nature or stature of Rupa Goswami, he was absorbed in bhajan. And one Baba came to visit him, and Rupa Goswami, while he was doing his bhajan in the samadhi, he was laughing at a scene he saw. And this crippled, lame Baba who came to visit him, he thought, oh, he's laughing at me? And so that Baba, he took offense. He said, this Rupa Goswami, he's an offender. He's laughing at me. And then he started saying something, because in his smaran, in his samadhi, Rupa Goswami was, he was serving as Rupa Manjari in Nitya Lila, in his form there. And there's some animal or something was coming to disturb Radharani Krishna's pastime. So he was saying, get out, get out. So while he's meditating, Rupa Goswami is saying, he's laughing, ha 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 ha, get out, get out. And so this lame Baba who's sitting in front of him, not knowing that he's absorbed in meditative samadhi, he thinks, huh? First he laughs at me because I'm deformed, now he tells me, get out, get out. So he left and he felt very offended. He felt that he was being criticized by Rupa Goswami. He felt that he was being criticized or offended. So then what happened is that Rupa Goswami, he broke his meditation broke. His sanctity, his peace of mind was disturbed because the mind of another devotee was disturbed by his behavior. Although he was completely faultless. So what to speak, if we are at fault, and we behave in such a way to agitate the minds of others or to elicit a criticism from them, then that also will affect our bhajan. That's why it explains that the behavior, a devotee behaves in such a way not to put any living entity into anxiety. He doesn't want to put any living entity into anxiety by his speaking, by his actions, by his movements, whether it's an ant or a animal, or what to speak of a human being. He doesn't want to put anyone in anxiety or cause any disturbance. So he tries to live a fault-free life. So there are many devotees like that. So if you criticize someone who's fault-free, then that will affect you and not them. But if the person has faults, and maybe even they're offending other devotees, and then people are taking offense, accepting that offense, or feeling offended, that person, then that they criticize that devotee will be affected by the criticism. This is your question. How will he be affected? He will be affected by the criticism if he is actually, if there is some existence of real things to be criticized. It will affect his bhajana meditation. In other words, we don't want to incur the bad thinking of anyone. We don't want anyone to think badly about us or to feel badly, because that will can affect our bhajan, can affect our meditation. Even if we're faultless, it can affect. Rupa Goswami's example, he was totally faultless. and pure. But his bhajan became affected because another devotee felt disturbed or offended. Right? That's very good. Oftentimes, devotees, they go to different people, and the person says, oh, you're having difficulty because your mother's not happy with you, your father's not happy. So this is, of course, we try our best to make everyone, especially our intimates, like mother and father, etc., we try to make them happy and peaceful to some extent by being human and civil and kind and compassionate and friendly and loving. But even though if we do all that and they still object and they're still demoniac and opposed, then we may have to draw a line. But sometimes we don't even try to comfort them or solace them, so they're thinking badly about us and it can affect us. They may be criticizing, well, he just left home, he became a sadhu, he doesn't care for us, he never writes, he never speaks. So even your mother and father are thinking badly of you. It can affect your mind, it can affect your bhajan. Because there's something called mental telepathy, transference of thoughts. Because this goes on. People, just like if a guru or spiritual master or elevated person, if he thinks beneficially of you, if he thinks favorably upon you, then those favorable vibrations, those favorable thoughts will be received by you and you will be benefited. That's why we're always saying, Kripa, Kripa Karo, or O Maharaj, Kripa Karo, Kripa Karo. Give me your mercy, give me your mercy. Think of me, or remember me. Because their thoughts will benefit you. And the opposite way, if someone is thinking badly of you and thinking hatefully of you and revengefully of you, it is not good. So, of course, this world is in such a way that Prabhupada said, even if you have no enemies, as soon as you become a devotee, so many enemies you will have. It's the nature of this world, because in this world there's two. In this world, even in this body, there's demons and devotees. So, it is difficult. But we try to be very... This is the behavior of the devotee, the mentality, the actions of a devotee. He's a good finder. He finds good in everything and everyone. Ultimately, the beginning stages of loving Krishna is to realize His presence everywhere as Super Soul. Your loving friend is in every heart of every living entity. If you, then we talk about Madhurya Bhava, Sakya Bhava, Salya Bhava, some of these great high realms of intimate exchanges with the love, with the pure devotees and the Lord, and hoping against hope in some future life to attain some level of purity and devotion. We have no even appreciation or love for the existence of our ever-well-wisher, who is ever-present before us as a Chaitya Guru of Paramatma. He's coming in all these forms to be served, to be loved, to be appreciated, to be glorified, to be honored. But do we see that? And if we see it, have we realized it? Because if we realize it, then we behave in such a way. We won't have friends, and we won't have one eye sees friends, the other eye sees enemies. There's my friend, here's my enemy. Dualistic vision. That is not the vision of pure devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam, the key. Srila Prabhupada, the key.